now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Good news and bad news, girls. The good news is your dates are here.
What's the bad news?
They're dead.
Ah! See, a United States astro robot becomes a creature of death. Oh.
And Dave.
We have come here to this planet for one purpose only, to acquire breeding stuff to repopulate our planet.
He who breaks the law shall be punished. Back to the House of Pain.
Back to the House of Pain.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-movie podcast from Clash of the Cults and the cheese in between. The movies are B. The entertainment is grade A. And I'm your host, Jason Giaconetti. And today, we're going to talk about a movie that a lot of people don't like from 2026, The Bride. And I'll get to it right after this.
Can anybody help me? Please. I didn't want any of this. Please help. Help. Help! What happened?
You had an accident.
An accident, huh?
We dug you up, and then we brought you back to life.
Get on stage, and I call her by her first name.
What did you want with a dead girl?
I'm the same. Born from the dead, I am a monster.
Yeah, so am I.
This world is a black hole.
Life is here and it's coming to you from the monsters.
Yes. Yes.
Everybody dance! Everybody sing! Everybody move!
Please don't hurt me, please. I'm sorry.
What are you sorry for? Did you do something wrong?
Something you thought you might get away with?
The Bride was released March 6, 2026, with a 126-minute running time. Your director and writer here are Maggie Gyllenhaal. Yes, that Maggie Gyllenhaal. Obviously, a lot of people know her from her work as an actress more than probably anything else. But she, she's been nominated for Golden Globes and two Academy Awards and British Film Awards, stuff like that. But this is definitely her venturing out into the world of directing and going to get into the world of writing as well. And we know, you may not know this, she's married to Peter Skarsgård, which is going to be come up because he's in this movie. So not just Rob Zombie puts their spouse in a movie. Just saying. John Carpenter did also because, you know, Adrian Barbeau. But I'm just saying. Anyway, so yes, Maggie Gyllenhaal, director and writer, based obviously on Mary Shelley's Frankenstein or the modern Prometheus, which was an answer on Final Jeopardy, and I got it right the other day, and all these other dumb butts couldn't get it right, these super smart people, but Jason got it right, so suck it. Anyway, sorry. Maggie Gyllenhaal was a producer. Emma Tingler Koskoff, Talia, man, these last names, Kane Helder, Osnat Hansman Cairn. Anyway, your main star here, Jesse Buckley. So Jesse Buckley is the, she's the bride. She's an actress and a singer. She's an Irish actress. She has an Academy Award, of 2 BAFTA Awards and an Actor Award, a Golden Globe, a Critics' Choice, the Laurence Olivier Award. I mean, so she's definitely a well-known, she's not well-known necessarily in America, but she's definitely been, the awards have followed her around. So she's an actress that is kind of, even though she's not young, I mean, she's 36, I mean, she's not super old, but she's literally still an actress who maybe a lot of people don't know. But you're the groom, so to speak here, right, is Christian Bale, which a lot of us know. Because, you know, he's Batman. But he's also Christian Bale from American Psycho and from The Machinist and everything else Christian Bale did. Peter Skarsgård, who is Maggie Gyllenhaal's husband, he is the detective in this. He's actually really good. Annette Bening is here as well. Jake Gyllenhaal, shockingly, appearing in his sister's movie. Penelope Cruz. So there are some big names in this film. Your cinematographer is Lawrence Shear. Now, the cinematography in this movie is outstanding. I know a lot of movie people have just been hating on this movie, and we'll get to that. I'm going to tell you, we're going to talk about that. And some of you might be like, why are you reviewing this film? Just go with me. Trust me, right? If you've been listening, we're 211 episodes into this podcast. 10 years, guys. Like, I don't, you know, sometimes I don't like movies. Sometimes I do like movies that you guys don't like, whatever. But I'm always willing to give a thing a fair shot. Sat down with my wife and watched this movie. I gave it a really fair shot. The cinematography is beautiful, for sure. So even if you didn't like the acting or didn't like the story or didn't like the whatever, the cinematography is great. The costumes are outstanding. Like, everything looks beautiful. So I don't think I've ever heard anyone say the movie didn't look beautiful. It's just a lot of what's there. Editor is Dylan Chincher. Your music is, Hildur Gudnadottir. I'm going to tell you now, there, I think there's an umlaut in there. There is an umlaut or something. And then there's like a accent thing on the O. So I'm not sure. I butchered that. Okay. The music is, I think the music is pretty good too. But anyway, production company was First Love Films and in the current company, Warner Brothers, with your big distribution. Now, they were hoping for more than this, because I'm going to say some numbers right now. And some of you are going to be like, see, I told you. Okay. Between $80 to $90 million to make it, it made $24 million. Yes, that's a bomb. I understand. I do. I get it. But you guys got to understand that even though it's a bomb, technically, it doesn't mean the movie's bad. It just means that it didn't connect with audiences when it was in the theater. Do you know what other movie totally bombed? There's this little tiny film from 82. You've never heard of it, I bet. John Carpenter directed a movie called The Thing, and that thing, Tank City, is literally considered to be one of the best films made, not just in sci-fi, but just as a suspense movie, whatever. But when it came out, a lot of people hated that movie. Oh my God. I'm not saying The Bride's going to do that, but I, you know, and if you hear the sarcasm on my voice, sorry, but I am sarcastic, right? Not everything has to do insane money at the box office to mean it's a good film. Often, the movies that are kind of not as deep, not as well-made, whatever, do well because a lot of people can sit down. It's a popcorn movie or a date movie or whatever you want to call it, right? And then you don't have as much rewatchability. I'm not saying that's the case. I'm not saying this is a film you're going to make whatever, but this is definitely going to fit in more of a cult following just from the way the movie was made anyway. Anyway. Let me get off my soapbox and let's know what's going on. All right. So, let me just speak about this right now, because I said this when my wife and I were watching it. Officially, Mary Shelley was not schizophrenic. She did not have schizophrenia. I'm saying that now. Officially, there's no documented case of Mary Shelley being a schizophrenic. She writes a lot of schizophrenia into her characters, and that's a lot of why people thought she was schizophrenic. She was clinically never confirmed to have schizophrenia. But she suffered severe depression, deep grief, which caused and from a lot of profound trauma in her early life, including family deaths, the suicide of her half-sister, the drowning of her husband, and the loss of three of her four children. Let that sink in for a minute. I know, this is super deep for Boss Bugs and Babes, right? I understand she might not have been schizophrenic. I get that. I do. But this sounds like someone who dealt with absolute severe depression and grief. Okay? So let's make sure we understand this. So I know, because some of you like to point out things. You're like, oh, let me take a jab at Jay for no reason. And I'll be like, build a bridge and get over yourself. Or just don't listen. It's okay. You're welcome not to partake. Right? I'm just saying, there are plenty of times when you see schizophrenia and a link to schizophrenia in her characters. Victor Frankenstein, the idea of it, like him himself being that way, the unreliable narrator you get, you know, through her stories, like things like that. Just saying. Anyway, so with that being said, because I'm going to talk about these things, we start the movie with speaking from the afterlife is Mary Shelley. We literally open with Mary Shelley telling you this story. Now you're saying, Jay, that kind of reminds me of The Bride of Frankenstein. You mean the movie that everyone loves? Yes. But well, that's Elsa Lancaster playing Mary Shelley and, shockingly, if you didn't know this, on a 90-year-old movie, playing The Bride of Frankenstein too. Anyway, Mary Shelley says she has a story that she wants to tell after Frankenstein or the modern Prometheus, but could not because of her death. To tell it, she possesses Ida, a woman living in 1936 Chicago, who in her trance publicly discusses the criminal activities of the criminal boss Lupino. Now, she goes from speaking like, you know, 1936 kind of woman to speaking in a British accent. It's really, really strange. And I think that's where a lot of people probably were like, I'm not getting this movie. I'm just not understanding what's happening here. I'll be very honest with you. It is weird. It started happening. And my wife said, what's going on? I said, I think it's possession. Because I wasn't 100% sure at first. I'm like, it looks like possession, but I don't want to guess that it's possession. You got to remember, too. My wife and I have very different levels of horror involvement. Where I might see possession or like, you know, a demon or something like that. She might not see that immediately. But we both had the sense that, like, it sounds like this person has something going on mentally that's probably off. And it's clearly just possession, but it comes more clearly as it happens. Anyway, Lupino's henchmen, Clyde and James, discreetly take her aside. And what Ida's possessed ranting causes her to fall down a flight of steps to her death. She was pushed, but okay. Elsewhere in Chicago, Frankenstein's monster, a.k.a. called Frank here, arrives at the house of scientist Dr. Cornelia Euphornis. Now that's Annette Bening, and obviously Frankenstein's monster Frank is Christian Bale. Having read about her work on reanimation, he enlists her to create a companion for him after centuries of loneliness. The doctor and Frank choose Ida's corpse and successfully revive her, but she loses her memory in the process. Frank then takes advantage of this and states that she is his bride and lost his memory in an accident. Now, I'm going to say this because it's going to come up, right? This is a very feminist take. There's a lot of feminist ideas in here, which I have no problem with. I'm open-minded about things. And I bet a lot of people really don't like it. It's okay. It's okay not to like it. I mean, you don't have to shout things from the rooftops. I'm just saying, and I'm not saying you have to agree with me. I didn't have a problem with it here. I think it makes sense. Actually, it makes a lot of sense here, kind of telling the story of the bride. Anyway, Frank and Ida sneak out and go see a movie featuring Frank's favorite actor, Ronnie Reed, a.k.a. Jake Gyllenhaal. And then they go dancing at a club. As they leave, two men attempt to assault her, and Frank kills them. Because that's what Frankenstein's monster would be doing. killing guys who are acting like jerks. Anyway, at no point do you feel bad for these guys. Now, am I super in love with Frank lying to her and trying to get her to be his, you know, his bride without being honest? No, right? It's not a cool thing to do. Obviously, doesn't matter if it's 2026 or, you know, 2016 or, you know, 1996 or whatever. Still not a great thing to be doing that. But we have to advance the story somehow, and this is how we get the story kind of going, and things will work themselves out. Anyway, what am I here? Frank kills them. Yep, Frank tells her to leave him, and she decides to run away with him. They stow away in a train to New York City, killing a police officer who discovers them after Shelley causes her to have one of her outbursts. Now, the whole entire time, Mary Shelley still is speaking to Ida, who is now the bride, and she will often go into these fits. And the fact that she can't remember who she is, which make it kind of weird too, and Frank is telling her all these lies to kind of tell her where they should be together. Anyway, all right. Meanwhile, Detective Jake Wiles, that's Skarsgård, that's Maggie Gyllenhaal's husband, and his assistant, Myrna Molloy, who is Penelope Cruz, investigate the murders and eventually follow them all the way to New York. While the pair is in hiding, Frank tells her her name is Penelope Rogers. Penelope causes chaos in a screening of the Revolt of the Zombies after this guy is trying to, like, you know, like, force himself on a girl. And they seek refuge from the police and an angry mob in a high-class party. Frank runs into Ronnie Reed and expresses adoration but is dismayed. Frank begins to dance like Reed does in the film, Penelope joining him. And the partygoers, possessed by Mary Shelley, join in. And we have a dance number in the middle of this. It is different, folks. It is definitely a different film. Detective Wiles and the police arrive at the party, but they fall back when Penelope holds Reed at gunpoint and calls out all the men in attendance for abusing women. Wiles recognizes her real identity as Ida. Penelope, who goes by now by Penny, kills the police officer, and she and Frank escape to the city in a stolen car. Penelope and Frank's crime spree becomes well-publicized. Lupino recognizes her in the newspaper. He executes James for falling to silence her and dispatches Clyde to kill her. Meanwhile, Molloy makes a connection between reports of murders and sightings of the pair in the cities where Reed's films were set. This prompts Molloy and Wills to travel to Niagara Falls, where they find the couple. Wills confronts them and informs Penelope of her previous identity as Ida before she shoots him in the foot. Fleeing, an angered Penelope takes the injured... Yeah, okay. So, oh, sorry. Yeah, sorry. Sorry about that. Ida gets shot in the foot, but Frank gets shot in the gut. And so fleeing an angry Penelope takes the injured Frank to a drive-in where she tells him of her origins. Wiles explains to Mallory that he and Ida were planning to take down Lupino and expresses guilt that his inaction led to her death. I'll be honest, there's not very, very good men in this movie. The women, again, whatever their choices might be, but I'm saying is, like, the women in this movie are clearly the heroic people, the people who do the right things, whatever. The men in this movie are not portrayed well. Again, I'm sure that's why it didn't make any money, guys. I'm not trying to be, you know, I'm not putting blinders on. I understand why it didn't make any money. Where am I here? Lupino. Sorry, I lost where I was. Sorry, guys. Here we go. Led to her death. He decides to retire and promote Mallory as his replacement. I'm not sure how that really works in the police department, but we'll go with it. Mallory tracks the couple to the drive-in. Frank apologizes for his actions and affirms his love for Penelope /Ida, who decides to call herself the bride. Not the bride of Frankenstein, just the bride, which is important. That's in the trailer. As he proposes, Clyde fatally shoots him, but the bride escapes with Frank's body, returning to Euphoria's lab, followed by Mallory. Euphoria refuses to reanimate Frank, saying that her attempts to reanimate her husband went wrong, leading her to have to kill him. Clyde breaks into the lab and fatally shoots the bride before fleeing. The police arrive, and Mallory orders, but the police end up opening fire too, so she's riddled with bullets. The police arrive, and Mallory orders them to search for Clyde, leaving the doctor with the bride and Frank's corpse in the lab. Encouraged by Mallory and Shelley, The doctor decides to revive the couple. Outside, the police arrest Clyde. Mallory sees the bright light shine from the laboratory. Inside, the revived couple hold hands. During the end credits, Lupino and those involved are apprehended by Wills and the bride-inspired female rioters with his tongue. He was cutting tongues out of everybody. So the bride's tongue is black in the film. It's part of the thing, and she has a black smear of her face. You can see it. And when the women start taking empowerment from her, you know, what she's doing at the nightclub and her spree of killing men, they start dressing the same. There's a lot of symbolism, obviously, there. Her tongue being black, meaning that it's dead, but Lupino's been cutting, having his people cut his tongues out and put their tongues on the wall because he's silencing people. I don't know what to tell you guys. I don't. Because I'm sure there's some people who would like me to come on here and just bash this movie. But I can't. I actually enjoyed this movie. Is it a movie I'm going to want to watch again quickly? Probably not. It's, you know, my wife and I watched it together. We obviously had a good time. You know, wife and I do not get much time to spend together actually watching a film together, and let alone without interruptions or field hockey or everything in the world being more important than two people who are married being able to spend 90 whole minutes together and not whatever, right? Or 2 hours, whatever it might be. So we both enjoyed it. And I think my wife said it best when she said, well, that was really weird. And I said, it is weird. It is a weird movie. It is definitely a different take than The Bride of Frankenstein. But The Bride of Reanimator is a different take than The Bride of Frankenstein. The one with Sting is a different take, not the wrestler, the singer. There are definitely different takes on The Bride of Frankenstein story, which is, of course, taken from Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, right? But by the same token, though, I think if you just tell the same story again, what's the point? You can just go watch, you know, James Whale's, version of The Bride of Frankenstein, and which is a far superior film than a lot of other, the way the film is made, I should say, is a far superior film to a lot of other black and white kind of horror movies from back in the day, which might have been like, and I'm not knocking other movies, but I'm saying is, when you look at how, like some of the Creature Black Lagoon sequels and like, or both of them, or even like some of the Frankenstein sequels and stuff, Bride of Frankenstein, visually, the way it's shot, the way it's laid out, the way it's done, is just a superior film in the filmmaking aspect of it. Does The Bride have some good qualities to it? Yes. Is it a perfect movie? Surely not. I've been, you know, keeping it like on my letterbox. I've been keeping my movies for 2026, you know, a list that no one ever reads, you know, your letterbox. If you're not famous, no one cares. Right. But I'm saying is there, it's one of those things that like, I've been ranking the movies that I've been seeing them in 2026. And is this better than Primate? No. Is it better than Obsession? No. Was it better than the Yeti? Yes. Like, I mean, it's a 3 out of 5 for me. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's a solid kind of film. But there's nothing wrong with it. It was enjoyable. Obviously I, you know, being able to watch with my wife makes it enjoyable. And I am trying to watch with a critical eye, even though it's the first time I'm watching a movie. And I do look for things like inconsistencies and stuff like that. Not as much as my dad, but my dad's obsessed with trying to find like the glass moving and the whatever. But I look at things like, you know, is it something where I could sit down and watch this and be okay with it? Yeah. Put it this way. I also recently watched Scream 7. And I like this better than Scream 7. And I like the Scream movies. But Scream 7 had nothing to it. There was nothing innovative. There was nothing crazy. It was just a regular, okay, we made a sequel because there's money to be made in a sequel. And I get that. I do. And I applaud directors and writers and producers who are willing to take a chance. This, and again, I don't think it's as good as, but I think it falls in the same world as like Repo: The Genetic Opera, a movie my wife loves. Repo: The Genetic Opera came out and no one knew about it. No one knows. Most people have never seen it. It's a really good lost gem. I think it's a lost gem that had to be kind of rediscovered, but I don't think it's ever been truly found yet. And could The Bride fall on that? Yeah. Could this become a cult movie? Yes. Is it? I don't know. I mean, guys, like when you try to make a cult movie, you usually fall flat on your face. When you try to make a movie that's, you know, different and innovative and whatever, and becomes a cult movie, that's different. And that's hard to do. And it's hard to predict. Could this movie find new life now that it's streaming? Maybe. Could this movie also just be another forgotten thing in the annals of 2026? Yes. Do I think Maggie Gyllenhaal should stop making movies? No, I think she should make movies. I think she should push the envelope. I think she should try things. The problem is, and this is my concern, is that, again, I understand her name carries weight because she's an actress and she's respected and all this stuff. But if her movies don't make money, studios aren't going to give you funding. And that's a shame, because I think the taking a chance on newer directors or newer writers or newer people, and I'm not saying that Maggie Gyllenhaal is new to all this, but I'm saying is this is a pretty aggressive moving away from the standard story of The Bride of Frankenstein. Yet while still having callbacks and touch points that 100% are the story. I think that allows, you know, for something different. And if you like it, great. And if you don't, okay, it's okay to move on. It's not a problem. Not every movie's going to change your life. Not every movie's got to be the best movie ever made. Life does not live in absolutes. I see that all the time. And I try to explain this to my daughter all the time. Life does not live in the absolutes. Everything is not the greatest, greatest, or the worst, worst. Could things tend one way or the other? Yes. But the reality is most of life does not live in those absolutes. We don't live in the black or the white. We live in the gray. And it's hard that for people to say that because they want to have feelings and emotions and whatever, because it makes them feel like I'm so involved. Cool. But by the same token, like, not everything has to be that way. Is this movie worth a watch? I think yes. I think it would be worth your watch. If you really can't stand feminism in your movies, then I might skip this one, right? There are people who don't like peanut butter with their chocolate. Even, you know, I know some people like, Mr. Like, oh, I'm allergic to peanut butter. That's not what I'm saying. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, some people don't like to mix certain things together. That's okay, right? I don't have a problem with it. I don't have a problem with a feminist point of view or story or anything. And I understand that it might at sometimes feel heavy-handed here. But, okay. And then maybe that's why this movie didn't hit higher up on the scale for me than it did. Visually, the movie's beautiful. I think the costumes are great. I think the makeups are great. I think the laboratory. Oh, there's like visual stuff that's awesome. But you know, it just kind of fell middling to me, you know, kind of thing. In that for the year, I mean, it's better than some I've seen, and it's not as good as others. You can draw your own conclusions. Did you see this in the theaters? I don't think there were many. Just because there's just not a whole lot of, didn't make a lot of money. But did you see it in the theater? What do you think? Did you catch it on, did you catch it like on like Prime or HBO Max or whatever this thing is on? I don't remember. Right. I bought the 4K of it. Why? Because my wife was like, this looks interesting. Right. Kind of thing. You're like, you blind bought it. I'm like, I did blind buy it with that. Cause I didn't know where it was going to show up. And to buy a digital copy of it for $24.99 seems stupid when I can get a physical copy for $25-$26 and the digital. So whatever. And what if it really hit? And if it was god awful, I would sell it off. I don't own a copy of Hereditary anymore, just for that reason. I didn't even have to sell Hereditary. I gave Hereditary away. That's how much I dislike that movie. And some people say that's the highest art in cinema and all this bull stuff, because you're just wrong. It's okay. Again, not having to agree does not mean that we can't get along. And you can listen to this podcast and you can say, Jay, you're completely full of garbage here. That's fine. Your opinion, right? Or you can say, Jay, I 100% agree with you. Again, that's your opinion. I'm just giving you mine. I'm just one guy kind of talking into the ether about, you know, movies. Be as it may. All right. So, folks, like I said, you know, have you seen it? Let me hear from you. If not, let me hear from you. Any of this stuff, the topic I brought up, the idea of like, why are some TV series rewatchable? Why are some not? Anything. I'd love to hear from you guys, right? I know we just did a feedback episode a couple of episodes ago, but I'd love to hear from you. Did you guys like that I covered my favorite Friday the 13th movie, obviously, with Friday the 13th part 7. But, you know, anything you guys want to shoot into me, suggestions, whatever, I'd love to hear from you guys. I always appreciate the feedback and I always appreciate the downloads and listens. Clearly, I'm not making a dime on this thing. So it's always great to know that maybe out there are at least a couple people kind of listening to my ramblings. Because normally I have a captive audience for 42 to now 50 something minutes, because why not? Because drop rotation schedule is not going to work. It's okay. We all know it won't work. This podcast is not about how drop rotation doesn't work. There are plenty of podcasts about that, even if no administrator wants to listen. But that's my captive audience, and I got a ton of talk on topic about math. But here at least we can talk about movies. So, all right, folks. So, Like I said, thanks for the downloads and listens. Thanks for all the support. I don't know what's next. I still got to figure it out. This is kind of playing by the seat of my pants, figuring things out here. But keep those cards and letters coming. And keep watching the sky.
This is Tokyo, once a city of 6 million people. What has happened here was caused by a force which, up until a few days ago, was entirely beyond the scope of man's imagination. Tokyo, a smoldering memorial to the unknown. An unknown which at this very moment still prevails and could at any time lash out with its terrible destruction anywhere else in the world.
Hi, folks. Luke Giaconetti here. I'd like to ask you a few questions. Do you like giant monsters, or as they're called in Japan, Daikaiju? Monsters like Godzilla, Rodan, Gamera, King Ghidorah, or Mothra? Do you like more obscure monsters, such as Gappa or Yangari? Do you like giant heroes like Ultraman, or super robots like the Shogun Warriors? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then I think you might like my podcast, Earth Destruction Directive. I'm a dedicated fan of all things Daikaiju, and I'd like to share that with all of you. Please check out Earth Destruction Directive at twotruefreaks.com. Earth Destruction Directive, where we turn your Daikaiju dreams into city-smashing reality.
This has been an episode of Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-Movie Podcast. If you'd like to contact me, please email the show at botsbugsbabes@gmail.com. If you'd like to find me online, I'm on Facebook under my name, Jason Giaconetti. I often contribute to the Two True Freaks Facebook group. You can visit my Facebook page, The Art of Horror Collective, and you can search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective. On Instagram, find me under my name, Jason Giaconetti, and search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective, as well as the new hashtag Bots Bugs Babes Podcast. I'm the only one using them. I'm also on Twitter at Jason Giaconetti, and you can visit my webpage at www.theartofhorrorcollective.wordpress.com. All movies, characters, stories, music, etc. are properties of their respective holders. This is a fan work, and any use of any property is purely for review, discussion, entertainment. So don't sue me. I ain't got anything anyway.
There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow!
Will you stop?